It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says we're waxing down our surfboards. We can't wait for June. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today is going to be, would we call it part two? It's at least going to be a follow-up to our most recent podcast, the one that came out right before this, which was about the discovery of gravitational waves at the LIGO facilities in September 2015?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so in that last episode, we talked about how the discovery happened, what gravitational waves are, and how they were eventually found. But in this episode, we wanted to talk about what it all means now that we have found and confirmed the existence of gravitational waves in our universe.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about some more specifics about LIGO, and also what this is going to, how we see this unfolding. Does it have any practical impact on your life as a, what I am assuming is a normal human being out there?
You might be a crawfish monster.
You could be. We talked a lot about those in our last episode, too.
I'm not going to judge either way, but I do either way want to tell you about some cool things about LIGO. And that's that, and the discovery process in general. So, even though like three dudes started this whole crazy ride back in like 1975, the paper that announced the discovery, which is titled, by the way, Observation of Gravitational Waves from a Binary Black Hole Merger, has over 1,000 authors. Scientific cooperation, y'all. That's so cool.
It's very inspirational to see. And, like we mentioned before, the fact that LIGO had to go through an upgrade process from 2010 to 2015, and that was an international collaboration, also really inspiring.
Yeah. And now that LIGO is working in this way, researchers expect it to make tens of observations every year. And usually when you say tens of anything, you're kind of making fun of it. But in this case, that's really cool because it will give us so much more data to work with.
And again, we're talking about events that are happening billions of years ago. So it's stuff that, if it happened a billion years ago, but the event was 4 billion light years away, there's no way for us to detect it because gravitational waves are limited, as is everything else, by the speed of light. They can only travel as fast as the speed of light.
Maybe not everything else. Maybe not the expansion of space during inflation.
Well, that's different. That's different. That's the universe itself, not stuff within the universe.
I admit it. I got you, Jonathan.
I admit nothing, except that I did accidentally say gravity waves in the last episode instead of gravitational waves. I will admit that. It's on tape.
Okay, right. Okay. But back to what it all means. So we have discovered gravitational waves with the LIGO facility. We hope to discover many more and learn more about them all the time. But what does this all mean for the state of physics today?
Well, first, it is yet another piece of evidence that supports Einstein's theory of general relativity. So,
darn it, I hate Einstein being right all the time.
Props to you, Mr. Einstein.
I want him to crash and burn someday.
Well, he's dead, so you got that going for you.
I mean his theories. I mean, I want us to discover that, in fact, Newton was right.
I mean, his brain was stolen for a while, so there's that, too.
Yeah.
You're already two up on Einstein. Your brain is exactly where it's supposed to be, and you're alive.
It was his eyeballs, too, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was. That's a wacky story for another time. At any rate, so it doesn't mean that the general theory of relativity is going to become a scientific law. That's different. But it does support yet more predictions that were made from general relativity. So if you say, if general relativity is correct, then we would expect X. This was one of those X things that we would expect. And in fact, we've now discovered it. We've found the evidence of it. We can say, yes, this is definitely correct, which is phenomenal, right? That yet again, we've seen how general relativity matches up with reality as we see it, as we can observe it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that general relativity is going to be absolutely all-encompassing. There are still big gaps for us to fill in.
Sure. How about the quantum level?
Exactly. But it is really an awesome display of Einstein's ability to suss things out to a level that is almost inhuman as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's so amazing to me that he can make these predictions that he had absolutely no way of testing. And then 100 years later, we get the news that, yeah, no, he was totally right about that.
Well, they did eventually have ways of testing the predictions of general relativity. But yeah, what you're correct about is that Einstein didn't have a test that he used to come up with general relativity.
You're correct. I was specifically thinking about the prediction of gravitational waves, that there was no way for him to test for that. There were certainly ways to test for other elements of general relativity, but the specific prediction of gravitational waves, that was something that they could not easily test for back in 1916 when he published the theory.
Mm-hmm. Other things that we're becoming more sure about as a result of this.
Black holes. Yeah. So finally, we've got, like I mentioned in the previous episode, the strongest evidence so far for the existence of black holes.
I think, by and large, the astronomy and astrophysics community was convinced of the existence of black holes already, but this is another really good piece of evidence for them.
Well, they were also convinced of the existence of gravitational waves, but again, it's one of those things where you say, this evidence is yet more support for this thing that we cannot directly observe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
And furthermore, that black holes can exist in binary systems.
Yes. That way you can get two black holes orbiting one another and then coalescing into a single black hole while vaporizing three solar masses worth of material, which, again, still blows my mind. Beyond that, we also are now able to track celestial objects that don't emit visible light or any electromagnetic radiation at all, as long as they are massive enough, if the event that they are undergoing is violent enough to generate gravitational waves. Clearly, if they're small, if the gravitational waves are very tiny and weak and really far away, so that by the time they get here, they're so weak as to be undetectable, LIGO's not going to make any difference in that. But for stuff that we cannot see but does create significant gravitational waves, now we have a way of detecting that.
Yeah.
And that means that we're going to get information about stuff that we know about but haven't been able to directly observe, and potentially find out about stuff we didn't even know existed. Like, we literally had no clue because there was no way to observe it. now we've got a new way to examine the observing
universe. Stuff. Yeah.
I've read quotes from a couple of different scientists involved with this project who have compared the LIGO method to essentially gaining a new sense for a person. One example I want to quote is from Miriam Kramer's piece on Mashable about gravitational waves, where she interviewed the LIGO scientist Subal Shmarka, who explained it this way, said, quote, "Imagine that you have all of your senses, but you can't hear. And the first day you gain hearing, you get a new life. Imagine how your life would change if you can actually observe, sense your surroundings in a very different way. This is what we actually gain with gravitational waves." And another one along the same lines was David writes to Physics World. He said, "We have been deaf, but now we can hear them. We now expect to hear things we never expected as we open a new window of astronomy. This was a scientific moonshot, and we did it. We landed on the moon."
Yeah, and I've seen that analogy of being able to listen to the universe and hear what is going on in the universe. I've seen that over and over from multiple people who worked on this project and other physicists who didn't work directly on the project but are obviously very much interested and invested in its outcome. And that particular phrase, you know, listening or hearing what is going on, has been used multiple times. And I think it is a very elegant way of putting it, this idea. And it, again, it kind of compares gravitational waves to sound waves, this idea of this thing propagating out through the universe, but at the speed of light and passing through everything it encounters. It's not blocked by other bodies, so it will eventually make its way throughout the universe. Maybe not strong enough for us to detect, but it will come to us at some point. And it means that we're going to be able to study lots of stuff much more intricately than we could before. Things like supernova explosions and neutron stars and more information about black holes, and learn all there is to learn that we can so far. It expands that possibility. Like, if you think about the things that that we could potentially learn before we had observatories like LIGO, there was a limit, right? There was there was a hard limit to what we could learn just because of the limitations on our instrumentation, our knowledge. Now we've got a brand new way to observe, so who knows what we will learn. It is probably one of the most exciting things about astronomy right now. In fact, maybe the most exciting thing about astronomy at the moment.
And it's already changing some of what we thought we knew about black holes specifically.
Yeah, it's changing what we know about black holes. For example, one of the things that was kind of interesting was they said they were looking at the angular momentum, essentially the spin of the black holes. So not the orbits of the black holes, but the actual individual spins. And they said that it ended up, the spin of the whole collision ended up being different from what they had expected. And they're not sure why. They don't know why. They have no idea. This is really exciting, because now we have to ask ourselves, why were the black holes spinning at a different rate than what we had anticipated? Was it perhaps that the two angular momentums of the individual black holes interfered with one another, and therefore that's what caused the issue? Or is it something totally new?
Yes.
Some kind of physics we don't even know.
Is there a variable out there that we've totally missed before?
Yeah. And it could be
black
something.
Black hole gremlins.
Well, and it could
black
be
black hole crawfish.
Okay, let's not go down that dark road yet again. but it could be something that isn't predicted by general relativity. It could be something totally new, which, again, really exciting. This also could lead to us having a greater understanding of how our universe is expanding and why it's expanding at the rate that it is. It also could end up giving us a very precise look at how much dark energy is in the universe, much more precise than any estimation that we have ever made before. And it could open new doors to all sorts of new disciplines that we can't anticipate right now. There's a term being used called gravitational astronomy that's really all about taking the data from these gravitational waves that we detect and then finding out what we can learn from that information. And we don't know yet. It's so new that we don't even know what to expect. We know that it'll allow us to look into supernova and neutron stars and black holes. But who knows what else? we'll learn.
But let's skip past all of this boring human curiosity.
Okay.
I want a practical application for this stuff. How is it going to work for me?
All right. Well, I want key lime pie, but I'm not getting it. So what I'm saying is that you want
to
bread.
Why aren't you getting it? There's a Kroger right next
door.
Because I'm recording a podcast right now. My point here is that wanting a practical application of gravitational waves is sort of being a little premature, I would argue, that we don't have any practical application for gravitational waves right now, apart from the fact that it is expanding our knowledge to a degree that we otherwise would have no access to.
Where's my warp drive?
Okay, so right. Warp drive, that's an excellent way of looking at, well, could gravitational waves lead to warp drive? Who knows? Maybe centuries from now. So gravitational waves do show that space-time is folding in these little ripples, and you could argue that, you know, the whole idea behind warp drive or warp systems is that you could warp space to decrease the distance between you and your destination. So by decreasing that space, you decrease the amount of time it takes for you to get to where you're going. It's kind of cheating that fact that you cannot travel faster than the speed of light. Well, you don't need to travel faster than the speed of light if you can make your destination closer to your departure, right?
Yes, but hold on a second. Now, what was that figure we had earlier that a gravitational wave of the kind we sensed with LIGO, it would take the distance of a kilometer and shorten that by 1/1000th the width of a proton.
Something like that, yeah.
So that's not going to be shaving a whole lot off
your trip. No,
like, maybe if you're a hypermiler in space.
Yeah, and especially considering that you have to like vaporize 3 suns in order to do it.
Look,
I'm not sure.
You can't
sure if...
make an omelet without destroying a few star systems. Okay? at least not a warp omelet. So, yeah, here's the thing, is that, one, we have no practical means of warping space-time at the moment. Apart from, like, some very experimental science that is of questionable authenticity.
Well,
and I use that not meaning that I personally question it. I just know that there's a lot of argument within the space itself in physics about various engines that are... at least intended to be a warp drive of some sort.
Well, I mean, I think we're inherently talking about a gigantic scale problem, a mass energy scale problem, because once you're talking about the kinds of events that cause these big gravitational waves, these large perturbations in size and distance in space-time, you're talking about things on the order of the mass of stars. And
or even of galaxies.
Yeah, in that case, you're talking about like a stellar engineering level of technology anyway, that we'd have to be like a Kardashev level 2 system or something.
Yeah, I am extremely skeptical we will ever create a system capable of warping space on any meaningful scale anytime in the foreseeable future.
Oh, without destroying everything around it in the process.
If you put that limitation on it, then even more so, yes.
Okay, all right. Warp drive is out, but what about warping time?
Okay, so yeah, we're talking about space-time, so time travel's clearly going to come up. Here's the secret, guys. We can all time travel.
Doing it right now.
Yeah, it's just called waiting around. And you travel through time, forward, at a scale that is remarkably consistent, but dependent upon your speed relative to an independent observer.
Though another thing we've talked about on the podcast before is that it is just an inherent consequence of Einstein's theories that travel into the future based on your initial reference frame is entirely possible.
Yeah.
Like accelerating beyond the reference frame from which you originated. So if you get into a spaceship and you travel near the speed of light and take a round trip and come back to planet Earth, you will have aged slower than you would have if you just stayed on Earth.
Right. Relative to the people who were back on Earth, you would have experienced less time. Like, you would have felt the passage, there have been a smaller amount of time passed on the ship, than people who were still on Earth had felt, because you were traveling at this much faster speed.
Yeah, and it's not just by traveling near the speed of light. You could also do this by being next to an extremely massive object.
So yes.
You could hang out next to a black hole or something for a while.
Yeah, these are both things that will warp time. So effectively, it would be like traveling into the future. It looks like, from everything we've ever seen, that traveling into the past is essentially a no-go. There's nothing that we've seen that has suggested that would be a possibility based upon these particular theories. I mean, there are other alternative theories that have nothing to do with what we're talking about, where people have posited the possibility. But based upon what we're chatting about right now, especially with gravitational waves, not so much. You're not going to be able to go back and have an excellent adventure or a bogus journey.
Okay, I'm willing to scale back my expectations if I don't get to use a warp drive or ride a T-Rex. What about just reconciling quantum physics with classical physics?
I have heard people say that
Did you hear it through a grapevine?
I did not. Not much longer will you be mine, Joe. I don't think you ever were. Honestly, when I look at you.
No, not at all.
This took a turn. Do you guys want to be alone?
Not anymore.
Tell me about physics.
Yeah, all right. So I have read at least a couple of different accounts that have suggested that perhaps the information we learn from gravitational waves could help us bridge some gaps between quantum physics and classical physics. When I tried to find out what they meant, like how would this bridge any gaps, I started coming up empty. So I don't know precisely if the person who was saying that was just kind of, you know,
spitballing.
Just like maybe, or if they were saying it from a place of expertise and they just didn't verbalize how they meant it. On the face of it, I don't know how it would bridge gaps, but then I'm not a quantum physicist. I have a very basic grasp of some basic elements, I should say, of quantum physics. And beyond that, it is completely a mystery to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure if gravitational waves, if our study of them will lead to this, the bridging of gaps. But if it does, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy for people to lose sight of the extent in some ways to which gravity is still mysterious to us. Like, we understand gravity very well. Einstein's theories give us an extremely accurate model of gravity that we can use to predict the behavior of objects in the universe. And it works great. So it's not like Einstein was wrong with general relativity. But, there are these lingering questions. Like, how come gravity does not reign at the quantum level?
Yeah. What effect, if any, does gravity have on various quantum processes?
Well, I remember hearing a problem is, why is gravity so relatively weak compared to the other fundamental forces of the universe?
Right. Yeah. The strong and weak nuclear force, that kind of thing. Yeah. These are all questions that we're still looking, you know, to try and find those answers. Gravity for the longest time has been kind of the big, like, where do we fit this in with our other models? And maybe through gravitational waves and through studying them, we'll be able to answer some of those questions and come up with a more complete model of the universe, which means we understand reality a little bit better. And that is phenomenal. One thing I would say about all this, while I've been kind of, you know, dismissing these practical application ideas, is that we can never anticipate what sort of practical applications may come of scientific discovery. And in fact, there may be some awesome practical applications that we cannot even guess at right now that in 20 years time will just be a part of everyday lives. And it's hard for us to imagine that. This is one of those times where when people make predictions about the future, they hit that stumbling block because it's something you could not possibly have anticipated unless you were, you know, some brilliant madman like Einstein and you had really considered this to a point where you had reached that logical progression and said, if this is true, then we could do this. But I'm certainly not at that point. I'm not nearly an expert on the subject. So I think that we probably will end up seeing some practical applications as a result of this.
You're saying gravity bombs, aren't you?
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe. You know, maybe it'll be one of those things where, you know, everyone will have that extra, you know, that one switch in your house that doesn't seem to control anything.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the future, that's just gravity.
Oh.
Right. You see, you hit it and like everything just starts floating. You're like, oh, that's what that one does.
You flip it and the TV remote is 1/1000th the width of a proton closer to your hand.
Right. Well, that saves me that much effort of getting up and picking it up. So now I can finally switch it to America's Funniest Home Videos. All right, so that wraps up this quick discussion about the future implications of our discovery of gravitational waves, our actual measurement of them, the analysis of them, what that might lead to. The best part about this, the reason why it's so short, is because there's so little that we can know right now. But that's the exciting part, because we will fill those gaps in our knowledge, like, you know, 10 years from now, think of all the things that, you know, if we were to still be doing this, which would amaze me, but 10 years from now, if we were still doing this, we could revisit this topic and talk about, here's all the stuff we didn't anticipate when we recorded that episode back in 2016. And that's really exciting. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, whether it is about science, technology, culture, anything really, if you just want to know, how is X, what's that going to be like in the future, you should write us and let us know. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Twitter or on Facebook. At Twitter, we have the handle fwthinking, and on Facebook, just search fwthinking in the search bar. We'll pop up, leave us a message, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.